Welcome to a Sober Girls Guide podcast, a lifestyle podcast based on sobriety and recovery. I'm your host and sober girl, Jessica Jabot. Inspired by my own sobriety and wellness journey, I want to spread the wealth of knowledge. Tune in each week for uncensored conversations about mental health, self-development, wellness and spirituality, and how they influence each guest's unique recovery journey. My goal is to educate and inspire and to let you know you are not alone on your recovery journey. Thanks so much for tuning in to a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Let's go! Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 240 of a Sober Girls Guide podcast. I can't believe it. Kate Siegel is here. You may know her from The Haunting of Hill House, and even more recently, The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix. Yeah, Kate is a big deal, and she is also a big sober girl. She is the queen of screams and now mocktails, and Kate Siegel is here to talk all about her sobriety. In this episode, we get into it. We talk all about feelings, emotions, and relationships, and how to deal and navigate through all of them. Kate also gives us some hot tips for socializing over the holidays. This episode is unbelievable. I cannot wait for you to listen to it. So let's get into it. Kate, what's going on? How are you?
I am so excited to be here. I love what you guys are doing on the internet. I follow you all the time and I'm always going like yelling at my phone. Yes, that, yes.
Oh my God, I love that. Well, thank you, because I am such a fangirl of all your work. I think we were just talking about The Fall of the House of Usher and how I wish I could have a lobotomy so I could rewatch it like with fresh eyes and a fresh brain, because it's so good.
Hot Ugh. Take. Have a really hard relapse. No, please don't. But like, sure, why not? Just wash it all away with
yeah. Juice. But I feel like that way with like all of your movies. Like, I love the Haunting of Hill House was definitely one of my faves. And I kept saying to like all my friends, I'm like, I wish I could just forget it. Like, I wish I could just take it out of my mind so I could watch it again fresh and just, it's so good. You are so good. I just love it.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I know that exact feeling. I know like a handful of shows, Six Feet Under, Friday Night Lights, The Wire, where you're just like, no, take it all away from me. Yes. Like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, but for TV.
Yeah. Like I want to start over because it's so good. Totally. Yeah. We definitely want to talk more about your movies and everything that you have going on. You have a lot of projects in the work that I want to talk about. But first of all, I want to talk about you. And I want to talk about, I call it our BS selves. So our before sobriety selves. Mm. So what was, could you give us like the behind the scenes look at what BS Kate was like before sobriety Kate?
Oh, gosh. I love her so much. She was doing the best that she could. And she really saved my life a few times because I had some legitimate shit from my childhood and like early teenage life that I couldn't look at, couldn't deal with, some sexual assault stuff. And Kate was like, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to just ignore it. And it's really hard to ignore that stuff. And so when it came up, like she made her executive decision to take a nice deep dive into alcohol. Like booze was my poison. I dabbled in drugs. Like I've pretty much done everything but heroin. And, but nothing ever stuck the way alcohol stuck for me. And it stuck really early. Yeah. Like I remember because it's so glamorized in media. It's so like a fancy and a glass of champagne and it's celebration. And it's, you're fed constantly this idea that a moment isn't special without alcohol. Yes. Or, and so I took that in because I loved media. I consumed media all the time. Right. And so around middle school, my like little bad girls, girlfriends were like, we're bringing in tiny film canisters of wine cooler and drinking it in the bathroom, pretending to be like at a fancy cocktail party. And it wasn't that we were trying to get drunk, but I think I needed just a little bit of numbing. Like I had a lot of stuff going on with anxiety and trauma. And so, you know, at that time, captain of the ship, Kate, was doing the best she could to get me through the day. And of course that escalates. And she, like, I was a good time gal till the moment I wasn't. I thought I was so cute. Like I really did. I thought I was so cute and so funny and so dangerous. But what I was kind of mean and a little bit grouchy and like loud and demanding. But it needed, I was doing something that my therapist calls mastering, which is that you put yourself back in this situation where you were hurt before to try to fix it over and over and over again.
Yes.
And so I was like cheating on boyfriends and stealing other people's partners because what I needed was like an intense sexual connection that I bested to kind of get myself out of that basement when I was a kid. So that I needed to win, thinking that would solve the pain. But it was hard for me to be in those situations without alcohol.
Yeah.
And so like, I look at it almost split, like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Like I loved a party. I loved a good time, but it inevitably turned to some really dark sexual activity because that was what I was trying to avoid looking at.
Yeah. I totally understand the, like going back into those kind of like situations to try and like overhaul them or trying to like win or make the situation like okay, like tolerable or like even so it's not, it's like you win. Like, I mean, I don't know how to describe it. It's like you win, you rewrite the story.
But you don't actually. What you do is get re-traumatized over and over. You're just like banking those little check marks on the wall and you look at it and it's like being in a prison and you're like, holy shit, look what I've done to myself.
And it turns into a pattern.
Yeah. It
literally turns into a pattern. I totally understand what you mean because I'm like totally attracted to unavailable people.
Yeah.
I'm
just
trying to write that. Like they're going to pick me.
This time they'll pick me.
I'm going to win.
I'll feel better.
Yes.
But the divine part of you, I just like, I don't necessarily, I'm not a higher power person, but the truly realized part of you is going, this is exactly what you want. And that's why you need to be numb to do it.
Exactly. And you're never going to get what you want.
No, because what you want is to be sober.
Yeah.
Which your only true desire is to be free of desire.
Yes. I think what you truly want is like someone to pick you, like you're like to find like your equal or align basically. Like you want to align.
You want you to pick you.
Yeah.
That's what you truly want is yourself to say, I choose you. I'll protect you.
Yes.
I will draw boundaries. I will keep you healthy and happy and a part of the world and connected to the world and able to exist in the world. So it's very much like platitudes on a coffee mug. Like you must choose yourself in order to feel chosen.
Oof. And you can't do that wasted. It doesn't really translate wasted.
Maybe some people can. I can't. I'm sure maybe somebody can. It's working for them. It's not really my business.
Yeah. I mean, you don't really get the full effects of like real self-love when you're wasted or hungover or like any kind of
I mean, listen, we're still in pre-sober, we're be sober before sober BS
yes
BS Kate. We'll get there eventually, but like there was not one experience BS Kate had that wouldn't have been improved by sobriety. Nothing.
Damn. So how did you realize, okay, something needs to change? How do I change this pattern?
I am so stubborn and obtuse. I needed to change for years. Like years.
Well, yeah.
Like I'm getting drunk at work. I'm getting drunk at acting class. I'm getting drunk like just constantly. And my husband was sober for years before I was sober.
No way.
Way. And he's taken care of drunk Kate. He hates her. She's a liar. She's just like lies about dumb shit.
Yeah.
And but he's so patient because, you know, Mike went through this. And so he knew there was, you can only build the door. You can't force someone through it.
Oh, so love that.
He kept saying to me like, hey, what'd you think about that? You like it? You like it? Oh, okay. Cool. And then it got to be like, huh, this seems to be really putting our family and relationship at risk. How do you feel about that? And I'd be like, it's not, you're controlling. And he'd be like, interesting. Nice moves. And eventually I was up in Vancouver working on a show about sobriety, which was like, okay. And I'm just sitting around like getting drunk after work and being like, cool show about sobriety, guys.
My God. Love it. Okay.
And it was COVID.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things to do in the world, like when I was drunk, was get drunk and go shopping, because any responsibility I felt about my finances was numb and I could just buy whatever pretty bag I was looking at without feeling guilt.
Totally.
But like during COVID, this really wasn't available to me because there wasn't bars. So Vancouver was kind of half open, half closed. It wasn't as bad as like America and LA.
Yeah.
It should have been. But anyway, I ended up at a bar and just sat there and like nothing terribly bad happened. I got pretty drunk and I drove home. So that's really bad. I was a big drunk driver, which by the grace of God, I and other people are still alive.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in bed with my stepson, who is 13 now. And I was trying to read him Harry Potter. And I couldn't say Voldemort and I couldn't say the words.
Yeah.
And like he had experienced, he's the only one of our kids who had really experienced me or Mike drunk. And Mike came home to it and he kind of like scooted me out. Like I wasn't I'm not entirely sure how drunk I was and how Rigby feels about that to this day. And hopefully someday I'll speak to him when he's an adult about that and apologize. I just don't think that he's like 13 is not the right age to talk about addiction, but when he gets, it's close, right? Like kids, that's when I started drinking.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we sat down and Mike was like, you were at a bar? I don't think you were wearing a mask. He's like, you just put the entire production at risk. You put yourself at risk. You put other people at risk when you drove. And like putting my son at risk, because Rigby's my stepson, he's like, that's a firm line for me. That's like a hard boundary. And somehow that moment with Rigby, that for me was clean enough to be like, holy shit, I love reading to this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm missing these moments and I'm really fucking up. And so then I, like most addicts, I was like, I'll do it for 30 days. I'll start and then I'll be in moderation and like, oh, well, you know, we have this wedding coming up and I'm going to want to drink champagne. So
yeah.
And I started managing it that way. And then another miracle happened, which was that I was at a gym at the time and I was in a deep sports tissue release massage and she got into my psoas muscle. And I recontextualized this thing that happened to me when I was 5 or 6, when I was a kid, that I thought was just normal kid, adult, like older boys, like 10-year-old boys playing doctor. Like I thought we were all playing. And all of a sudden I went, oh, fuck. And I burst into tears and the trauma came all the way up.
Yeah.
And at the time I was still in therapy and I was like, until I process this, I can't drink again. Because it only took a week of solid sobriety, which I hadn't had since I was 13. I mean, I guess when I was pregnant.
Yeah. Okay.
But other than that, for this trauma to punch me in the jaw at its first chance, it was ready. And so then I, you know, am I talking too much? Is this?
Oh, go. No, please.
And so I finished out Midnight Mass, which was very helpful because it was about sobriety. So I could like be a part of that. And then immediately, like there's just like a pattern of really, like I stepped into different sunbeams of grace, right? So the first was Rigby, and then the second was Midnight Mass. And then I moved on to this movie, Hypnotic.
Okay.
And my core group there, my co-star and one of my directors, were both sober. And so they were able to kind of guide me. And we created this kind of like sober group where we would have meetings, just the four of us.
Yeah.
At first the three, then the four. every week over Zoom.
Cool.
And they got me through my first year. And then very quickly, every single part of my life got better. There was not a part of my life that didn't immediately improve once I got past the negotiation stage.
Yeah. So you were in like the 30 days. You're like, okay, I'm going to like give this a try for 30 days. I'm going to get this like sorted out. And so I can drink, like I can keep drinking, right?
Yeah. So I can get back to what I like to do, which is drinking.
Right. Drinking.
Sure.
Yeah. Basically negotiating, justify, rationalize, right on.
Yeah.
And then that trauma came up, which is like looking back at it now, like
the whole
heaven
point.
Sent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And then, so how long has it been now?
3 years. 3 years, like a couple days ago.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. That is incredible.
Thanks.
Tell me about the first year and having, how important was it having that little niche group around you?
It's super important for me. Sobriety is like, sobriety is probably the top of my priority list. Like it goes sobriety, yes, family, relationship, like marriage, career.
Okay.
And so having that priority set for me, I can say yes and no to things as it goes. Like, does this threaten, like, and there is a situation, like I've talked to myself, like, listen, if there were kidnappers holding my children and they were like, you need to chug this fifth of vodka, done, fine. In that particular way, maybe family is above that sobriety, but otherwise, like if it's going to threaten my sobriety, I can't do it.
Right.
And so that first year, I learned that one of the things that is very helpful for me in my sobriety is to talk about it all the time, which is one of the reasons AA didn't work for me. The anonymous for me was really hard because I was like, I can't be anonymous. I don't want to be anonymous. I don't want the people I'm sober with to be anonymous with me. I want to be loud and proud about sobriety. It was almost like a coming out. I think it's this amazing superpower I've gained and I'd like to talk about it. Like parties 100%. Are so much better. Socializing is so much better. My hair, my skin, my sleep, my sense of self, my health, everything's so much better. I don't know why I would keep that a secret.
Yeah, exactly.
And so a lot of the people I connect with through sobriety, also my very close friends, Molly and Alon, are sober. Like once you start kind of poking your head up and you're like, hey guys, I'm sober. All of the sober people you didn't know were in your circle. They're like, awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And then all of
totally.
A sudden, there's always sober people at events. There's always sober people on set. They're there all the time, but they're just so much more confident in who they are.
Yeah.
They're not as loud as the drunk people.
Oh my gosh. Like 100%.
Yeah.
Me and my friend were talking about this yesterday and she's like, you know, I stopped drinking and I thought everyone was drinking as much as I was when I was drinking. It turns out like I was hanging around one or two drink people.
Yeah.
And I was the only one drinking bottles at a time.
Yeah. And then I had a couple of friends who I was like, our favorite thing to do was go to a bar and get smashed.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I'm going to really miss those friendships. And honestly, the ones that I love, like my best friend, we don't do that. She's not sober, but like our friendship is deeper, more real. I remember our conversations now. We go for hikes. We still go get dinner. We do like weird craft projects. We lay in bed and watch reality TV. Like it's these fears I had. And even like remembering the voice that would say those fears to me, like, you're going to lose all your friends. You're not going to be any fun at parties.
Yeah.
You won't have anything to do or talk about when you go to an industry event. Like this fucking voice that just uniformly lies. Drinking is about lying.
Yeah, totally. And I think like the fun factor of it all, like what is the fun exactly? Like how do we even define fun?
But this goes back to, I think, what the media has fed us.
Yeah.
Because if you go to if you say to yourself, like, I don't know, Kate seems to be real full of herself on this episode. I'm like, go to one party sober, go to one. And you'll realize that the drunk people are the worst.
Like
the first hour of the party is tolerable. And then everybody slides down into this thing where they're just telling you the same story over and over again. and their eyes are glazed over, and like, it's, they're not fun. They're not, and they think they're fun and cute.
Yeah.
But you go to one party like that and you're like, whoa, whoa. And all of a sudden, like, you can see the ones and zeros in the matrix, because what has happened is we've been fed the media, which shows these amazing parties where everyone's so glamorous and drunk and whatever. And what people forget is most of the time, those actors are sober on set performing.
Yeah. They're acting.
They're acting. It's not that fun. The reality of a drunken party is not that fun. And like, movies really glamorize it. Really glamorize it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I don't know about you, but I was definitely addicted to the drama component that came with drinking. Right?
I still love drama.
I still love drama too.
Really working on that. I love to talk shit. I love when people have little secrets to tell me.
Yeah.
And that to me is still part of that, right? Yes, I loved the drama of drinking.
Yeah. But I think what I don't love anymore, like, I, like you, used to be like, oh my God, like, let's hook up with this person's boyfriend or this person's girlfriend or like this, that, and the other, just to like, I don't know, because I can.
I wanted to win. I needed, I hated myself so much.
Yeah.
That validation. Like, I needed to win over another woman or man. And it was like,
yes,
that's not an excuse for the people who I hurt, but it is the reason it happened. It didn't happen because I was a monster or like a narcissist or a sociopath. It happened because I was so in so much pain.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I tried AA. It didn't work for me. I balked at my fearless moral inventory and amends, because I think a lot of that is self-flagellation, and I already do enough of that.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot of amends just on my own, just like the people I feel like I need to be like, hey, sorry, I really fucked that up. And some of it, like, the situations got violent and sticky, and I wasn't the only bad person in that situation.
Yeah.
And like, flagellating myself in front of somebody who also hurt me, even though I started it, doesn't feel good to me. Doesn't help my sobriety, doesn't help my family, doesn't help my marriage, doesn't help my career.
Yeah.
So
totally
doesn't help my relationship with whatever I believe. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you need to do what's right for you and what feels good for you, because ultimately you know yourself more than anyone else does.
Yeah. So, and every day you stay sober, you're going to know yourself more.
Yes. Which is amazing and terrifying.
God, it's the fucking, it's the most drama. It's the most dramatic thing I've ever done. Like, Jesus Christ, getting to know myself. It's just like, for most of my life, I thought I was a cat person. Turns out I hate cats.
Dead. What?
Like, yes. Like, we, you know, they're like, everyone's family has these like things about their family. Like, we're a family that loves chocolate. My family was always a cat family. We're like, we much prefer cats. Dogs are too friendly and loving. Gross. And I was like, I'm a cat person. I just want, like, I don't want the responsibility. And I like, when I got sober, I was like, no, I want the devotion and love and the affection to give and take with a dog. I don't want the aloofness of a cat. I don't want a box of piss in my house.
Yeah.
And it was a shocking revelation to me that I was not a cat person.
Whoa.
Like, that's the type of getting to know me. Like, I didn't know nothing.
Do you know your attachment style by chance?
Oh, it's very, it's the bad one. It's disorganized. Because okay. Of, like, the abuse.
Hold up. I'm also disorganized too. Okay. wait a second. I wouldn't call that bad. It's just not favorable.
That's true. It's not the one I would choose. It's not the one I'm helping my children develop.
Yes.
But yes, it's mine. So it's absolutely. Yes. I mean, I am, there's nothing, people sometimes ask me, what's your greatest fear? Because this happens a lot in press for horror stuff.
Okay.
And I always throw something out, like dying alone or spiders. But the reality, my greatest fear is other people's emotions. I don't like it. I really.
Can you please change that press answer and just really flip the script on them? That would be amazing.
But like, some people who are giving interviews, they're kind of on a train. And if you say that, they short circuit. And it's not a very kind thing to do to them. Those people get spiders. Totally. I hate spiders.
Yeah, like, let's just keep it moving.
We're moving. Yeah. But other people's emotions, I fucking hate it. Oh,
really? Oh my
or like
God.
The way people like micro express their emotions, like breathing through their teeth or a sigh. Fuck. I'm like getting hot thinking
oh,
about it.
Oh my God. What about crying?
I don't like it. It just like really makes me like deeply uncomfortable and sweaty. And because like I feel like I have to fix it.
Oh yeah.
I feel like it's my fault. I feel
Yes.
like I'm responsible for this. I feel overwhelmed by it. And then I get angry because I don't want to be responsible. Like I have a whole thing that I have to, I just visualize unhooking my car from their train. Like I unhook.
Yeah.
I unhook and I'm watching and I have to literally disassociate when other people are having emotions. I really work on it with Mike because he's the safest person I know.
Yeah.
And it's a lesson my children teach me every day because kids are nothing but just like big squishy sacks of emotion.
Yes.
But like, this is the focus of my 40s is it's okay for other people to have unpredictable emotions.
Yeah.
I hate it. I don't want it. I don't want it. No, no, thank you.
Okay, well, it could be different. I personally get a little bit turned on when people cry.
Stop. That's kind of weird. So fun. That's so, what a great choice. My next character is taking them.
Fucking right? Yes.
Yes, that's a great choice.
And it's like, it can be a little bit creepy.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's, I find, and I used to be like that. I used to be like, oh my God, emotion, like overload. Yeah. Nope, stay away, get away from me. Now I'm like, wow, you're crying. And I can only imagine what it's taken you to get to that point to physically like express yourself that way and be that vulnerable. Like that is the sexiest thing ever.
Wait, do you cry? Are you a crier?
Oh yeah.
There you go. That's self-love.
But like,
you're so proud of yourself for crying. That's great.
Yeah. But I am like a, I'm not like all the time crier. I'm like a pressure cooker crier. Yeah. So I let it like really build up and then I'm like, I can't do it anymore. Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's I will cry at like the most ridiculous situations. And like a receptionist is just like, wow.
Oh, you're just
I just need like your first name, nice. Girl.
Yeah. You're like, you're the ma'am. This is a Wendy's meme.
Yeah.
Just like walking around.
Yes, totally. Yeah. But I've kind of like trained that little thing around and like, I'm not like, oh God, I got to run for the hills. Like, I'm like, oof, that is hot. And I don't know if that's right or wrong, but here we are.
I'd like to like, let's meet in the middle. Where it's it just is. Somebody is having a feeling in front of us and we are just, that would be my dream. Like the dream of being a cool girl. I know they don't exist. I get it. I saw Gone Girl. Don't come and like, don't hit the comments on this. But like that, I have this fantasy of being untouched by things, which I think is probably wrong. Like it's, I get that. Like it ties into my fear of emotions, like even my own emotions. I guess that's why I act. But
how has getting sober affected your acting?
Oh, this is fun. This is another one of the nasty voice things. Was like, you can't be an artist unless you're tortured.
100%.
And I used to love, along with getting drunk and shopping, I used to love after I'd like memorized a scene or done all the work, getting drunk and doing the scene, because like random shit would happen.
Yeah.
And but guess what? Random shit isn't a good choice. Random shit isn't art. Like the difference between my 4-year-old's paintings and Jackson Pollock is intention and choice.
Yes.
And so I was just wrong. And it like stuff like that really, for me, I have a hard time if the truth is presented to me, not accepting it. Like I will change my mind. I'm not stubborn in terms of belief.
Okay.
And so very quickly I was like, oh, those choices were bullshit. Those choices were overacting and they were kind of like scenery chewing and they were presentational. And I was so proud of myself. That wasn't about honest vulnerability in the moment. And so very quickly, I was just like, oh no, like everything else, drinking was fucking up my acting.
Yeah. Whoa. And that makes sense. Like, I think we get this kind of false sense. Like, yeah, I mean, drinking when you're drunk, you get this kind of false sense of like confidence for the first 15 minutes. Yeah. Whatever. After that 15 minutes, after that second glass of whatever you're doing,
it's not good. It's not
hot.
Nothing. Again, people who are listening and who are sober curious, because I listened to sober podcasts for a year before I got sober.
Okay.
There used to be this great one called Seltzer Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And they've disbanded now because I don't know.
They did?
I think they changed. One of the girls got married and then something and then like whatever. But I loved it. And sometimes I'd be like, they don't know what they're talking about as I'm like drinking and listen to this podcast. And so again, if you're listening, just go to one party sober this holiday season. Choose one that you don't care about that much, that you're kind of being forced to go to. And you'll see what we're talking about. It's completely bizarre. It's bizarre.
Do you have any like tips like to anyone listening who's maybe like this is their first sober holidays, right? They're going into the holiday season. Mm-hmm. What kind of tips would you give them going into a social situation?
So I got sober on November 17th. So I started, I was baby sober at this moment.
Right.
And I'll tell you what I did. And what worked for me is I just said no to everything.
Yeah.
I just didn't go for a second.
Yeah.
And I like that made me sad. Like I wanted to go to parties.
Yeah.
And I couldn't go to parties. And then I was like, all right. And I had a team of people like friends who were willing to hang out with me and not drink. And so I'd be like, I really want to get dressed up and just like hang out. And so, but it was kind of sad. Like I'd put on a fancy dress and we'd sit in my living room and talk about my sexual assault. Like it wasn't a cute moment.
Oh,
geez. Yeah, being my friend is a dream.
Happy holidays.
But my answer to you is like, listen, you're gonna have some nights where you want to do a thing and you can't do a thing. Congratulations, you're a fucking adult.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's what comes, you know, with putting sobriety as a priority. It doesn't mean that this is gonna last forever.
Nope.
But if you're putting sobriety as a priority, everything you do is going to kind of follow suit.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, one day at a time is a great mantra. Like, I'm not going to go to a party and drink tonight. Tomorrow, I can go to a bar in the morning if I want to.
Yeah.
And you'll wake up and you may not want to go. But if you
probably won't.
And sometimes you'll have to do an hour at a time. Like it's 8 o'clock and I'm not going to drink until 9 o'clock. And guess what? If you then have a glass at nine, you still win.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to be perfect out of the bat, out of the box. Yeah. You don't have to be perfect out of the box at first bat.
Yeah.
Box bat.
Out of the bottle, out of the box, whatever.
Just don't bring your emotions to me. I'm talking about my sexual assault with my friends in a ball gown.
Oh my God. I love that. I'm just picturing that, like sitting in your living room.
God bless them. God bless them, everyone. Because they were sober people. So they knew, right?
Yeah.
Like that. This first month is about just like random stuff coming out. And like, I'm so grateful. Another like little sunbeam of gratitude. Like I tend to be pretty sarcastic and funny. So it wasn't just a sad slog through the reality. It was like jokes about me and jokes about sexual assault. And like,
I mean, I think we have to say for anyone listening to this, yes, it's serious, but I think you can tell that you've healed or you've done the work because you're laughing.
Oh, it's the most serious. But like, I also think if anyone's sitting there judging it, they're probably not a survivor because the survivors of sexual assault that I know are uniformly like devastated by it, but also very self-aware and very like, they'll make a joke about it. They'll be a part of it. Like part of healing is laughter.
Yeah. And the finding the humility, like we're all human. Yeah. Like we didn't choose for that necessarily to happen to us.
And then once you drag it out of the closet, like once you drag it out of the dark, you realize you're not alone. You start to feel like, oh my God, it wasn't your fault. And there's a levity that comes with that.
Yes.
When you start to see it for what it is, as opposed to what it was when it was hidden inside of you. Mm. And there's joy in that.
Yeah. And that's something I've never understood with AA. It just feels like, why do I need to like hide this part of myself or not have it be a part of my life? Because I think it's like a really awesome part of my life. I'm so proud of it.
Yeah.
So proud.
I really think AA is meeting dependent. There are people I know who have found the best room and the best group and they love it. And I watch them just thrive off of their home meeting.
Yeah.
It was never it for me.
Same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never felt good like leaving a meeting. I was just like, this is it. Shit.
I always felt like everyone in a meeting was trying to fuck me, which was probably projection. But you know what I'm talking about? And there's like that meet and greet afterwards. And like everyone wants to talk. And maybe it's because I was like going to Hollywood meetings in my 30s. But like it felt like it definitely felt like a real meat market. And that made me feel unsafe.
Because totally.
My sharing stories are about horrible things I did in my 20s, most of which are sexy.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be sharing sex stories to people who are then like, hey, can I get your number?
Yeah. Green light.
And I know there are the AA people sitting at home going, you should also go to Sexual Addicts Anonymous now. And you should do this and do that. And I was like, I'm working on it, bro. I'm working on it.
Have you ever gone to any meetings in West Hollywood?
Yeah.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Wow. That is an experience.
And like for the people it works for, good for them. But like, listen, I'm in my 40s. I am so happy in my marriage. I'm monogamous. I'm like, really, once I got rid of alcohol, I felt like my problems, although they didn't disappear overnight, they were manageable for me. I became like a sane person. I was so out of control with it in my 20s. And like, even when I was married, like it wasn't, that's like, I don't want to give up out this feeling that like in my 30s, when I was married and drinking, I was just like a deviant. I was committed and that way. It was mostly in my 20s and in my teens where things were totally out of control. Mm-hmm. And it is important, I think, to say that too, that like there's a version of my life where I never stopped drinking, where it's all right. Like it's fine. I wasn't blowing things up. I had a successful career. I was committed to my marriage. Yeah. I had two kids that I gave birth to and one that I'm a stepmom to, that I was successful. And that's another thing. Like I listen to these stories sometimes at AA about people who were ruining their lives. And I couldn't get there because I was like, it's like, my life isn't terrible. It's just, I know it could be better.
And that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's even harder than having this like whole like rock bottom kind of situation.
Yeah.
It's just this like little buzz of like, not great, but not horrible.
Yeah. Just it could be better.
Coasting. Yeah. Totally. And that's, I think that's the hardest place to make a choice and a decision and a change eventually.
Yeah. It was real. It took a really long, I was a slow, I was a snail about it.
Yeah. Same. Matt, we're here.
And we're here, and I can't wait to meet all the people who are also doing it. Like, right? I love these people, my favorite people.
Totally. Kate, one more question for you. Mm-hmm. To anyone listening who is maybe thinking about getting sober or going through it in the beginning stages, what piece of advice could you offer?
I love you and it'll be okay.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how to do it. There's nothing. It's yours. It's going to be absolutely yours. And that's the best part of it.
Yeah.
It will be yours from the very first drink you say no to. And but I love you and I'm proud of you and it's going to be okay.
Totally okay. More than okay.
Sure. Definitely. And even if it's just okay, it's better than being drunk.
Totally.
Yeah.
Kate, where can we find you on the World Wide Web?
I'm on the internet. I am Kate Siegel Official on Instagram, which is I'm official.
Yo.
Which is where I'm the most active. I also, I think, have a TikTok.
Okay.
And total transparency, I create all my own content, but I have much more talented people posting it for me on a schedule because I'm bad at schedule and routine.
Okay.
And so I'm most interactive on my own Instagram. So from there, you can find everything else out. But the content I make is all me. I do it myself.
And obviously head to Netflix for the fall of The House of Usher.
Yeah, please do.
Oh my gosh. So good. Oh, I want to watch it over again. Thank you so much, Kate, for taking the time and to share your experiences and your knowledge with us. This has been so great.
It really has been a fabulous conversation. Congratulations on sobriety. How long do you have?
Thanks. 7 years.
Oh, girl. I'm so proud of you. I want what you got. I'm coming to get it.
Come and get it. It's here for the taking. And yes, come and get it. Not only for Kate, but for you listening as well. Sobriety is up for the taking. If you are up for the challenge, we got your back, girl, at any stage of your booze-free journey. Thank you so much for listening. Please make sure to rate, subscribe, and leave your feedback and comments about the podcast. And remember, sharing is caring. If you know a friend, a family member, or loved one who needs to hear this podcast episode or any of our other episodes, please make sure to share it along to them. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at A Sober Girls Guide, and head to asobergirlsguide.com. Like I said, sobriety is up for the taking, and we are here to support you along your booze-free journey at any stage of the game. We got your back, girl. From our Sober Girl Social Club membership to group coaching to one-on-one coaching, we got you covered at any stage of your booze-free journey. Head to asobergirlsguide.com now. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.